Welcome to episode 118 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Today I'm going to talk about DxO Optics Pro version 5 and the DxO film pack, which DxO Labs have kindly made available to me to try out, and have also kindly agreed to provide a copy of these two great programs as a prize, which will be awarded to the entrant with the most accumulated votes at the end of the current assignment, which is longer exposure. We should know the winner when voting closes on February 3rd, 2008. But for now, I hope that you can sort of whet your appetite with today's podcast. And here's a message from DxO Labs before we start, read by me, of course. DxO Optics Pro sets the standard for automatic correction of your digital images based on extensive analysis of cameras and lenses. This award-winning software enables photographers to improve hundreds of images very quickly, saving time and providing spectacular results. Version 5 of DxO Optics Pro runs on Mac and Windows. Version 5, which has only just been released, incorporates a new generation RAW converter, providing more details and less noise artifacts for a new level of image quality. Okay, so I need to say from the start that I first started playing with the DxO Optics Pro version 4.5 that I received from DxO Labs a few months ago. I started to understand how powerful the program is, but around that time I heard that they would be releasing version 5 later, and so I decided to wait for that to do my review and to also ensure that the grand prize winner got the latest version. And I have to admit that I kind of regretted that last weekend when I sat down to start preparing for my review, as it turns out that although version 4.5 worked on 64-bit Windows, version 5 does not, at least at this point in time. I see from the DxO forum that there will be a version for 64-bit Windows that works in 32-bit compatibility mode, and they also mention that they're thinking of doing a native 64-bit version as well, and they'll be available soon, so all is not bleak. It did mean, though, that this review had to be delayed by a week as I figured out how to do this on a 32-bit version of Windows, or, well, actually, how to get my hands on a 32-bit Windows machine. So first off, you have to download the either the product if you buy online or the modules for your camera and lens combinations. I'm not sure how this works when you actually buy the package because mine was a download. But basically the download manager helps you to select your cameras and lenses. And the version that our winners, the winner of the accumulated vote prize will receive is going to be the Elite version, not the Pro version. Is that Pro or Standard? I forget. But anyway, it's the best one that you can get, the Elite version. And this basically allows you to download any camera body and lens combination, that, as long as it's supported, obviously, in the list. If you own a professional body from the 5D and above from Canon, or for the D2X or the D2XS from Nikon, you'll need to buy the Elite version if you're thinking of picking up a copy of this software. Pretty much everything else, it seems, is supported by the Standard version. But with the nature of the software, it seems like it takes a little while for DxO to update the modules in the for the latest bodies that the manufacturers are releasing. I see that the 40D is now supported and the 1DS Mark III is set to be supported soon. If you intend to pick up a copy of this product, though, please do go to www.dxo.com and ensure that your camera and lenses, that you know, the ones that you want to correct at least, are in the list. On the first screen in the download manager, you get to select the camera bodies that you have photos from that you want to correct. And then on the next screen, you select the lenses. And I should note that there are things that you can do with DxO Pro, Optics Pro, even if your lens or body is not in the list there. What I'll do is I'll put a link to the product comparison page into the show notes. And if you scroll down to the bottom of that, there's a list of features that are available in version 5, including those that can be used without any, on any image, without the actual lens or body being supported. And there's also a list, obviously there, of things that will only work if they have support for the body and all the body lens combinations that, you've shot the images that you want to correct. This will also be useful if I'm, I'm not going to be able to go through everything today, all of the features. But in this list, it does, like I said, it lists all of these features. So it'll be good if you go along there and take a look and see what the software can do, because I'm not going to be able to cover it all today. Let's move on, though, and take a look at what I did do. So after the installation, you have to activate the product. But to say that say if you want to just try it out, you can download it from dxo.com and just try it out for a few weeks. And I strongly recommend that you do this if you're considering buying a copy. There are both Windows and Mac versions, so no one needs to be left out as well. Once you have activated or selected to try the product, it'll launch. And to be honest, the version 5 launches a little bit slower than version 4.5 did. And it does become, it's a much more powerful piece of software now, though. So I can handle this, but a little improvement here would reduce the stress at startup. Once inside DxO Optics Pro, you'll find 4 tabs across the top of the window that guide you through the process of correcting your images. What I think I'll do is I'll create a post on the forum, probably 2, one for the DxO Optics Pro and one for the film pack, and I'll just post a bunch of screenshots in there so that you can go and sort of look at them. We won't look at them as we normally do, look at my photos or other members' photos right here in the podcast. So if you're at a computer, go over to martinbaileyphotography.com and look for the post in the MBP podcast forum. I'll also put a link to the forum post, directly to the post in the show notes. And if you're looking at the post now, you'll see that there's a bunch of screenshots there. And I'm just going to number them from 1 to whatever. So you'll see that in screenshot 1, the top left tab is called Select. And this is, as the name implies, where you select your images that you want to work with. A nice touch in version 5 is that you can now select an Adobe Photoshop Lightroom catalog as well as going straight to the location of the images on your hard drive. This allows you to list images, as you would imagine, from the library or from the folders that you have that you've sorted your images into in Lightroom, or collections as well, which I thought was particularly useful. You can, for example, stay in Lightroom and make a collection of images that you want to work with, and then just save them as a collection, and then come into DxO Optics Pro and select that collection as your base. In addition to the Lightroom view, and there's also there a file system view. It's also possible to load collections from a database of old projects. So if you've, you know, created projects in DxO Optics Pro, as you will do as you start to use it, then, you know, you'll be able to go back and look at those as well, which is pretty useful. So anyways, select one of the three items. These are in the top right of the window. And, you know, just really work through and get to the images that you want to start to correct. Once you have your photos selected, you need to add them to a project. There are some presets like darker vision or romantic look, things like that, that you can actually add, you know, select when you're adding to a project. But I'm just going to use the default, and this adds your selected images to a film strip. All of the presets do this. But once you've selected them and selected your preset, it adds them to a film strip at the bottom of the window and also auto-rotates them for the first time. I had to manually rotate the blue flower shot that you can see on the far left of the film strip, but that's really just because I had the camera hanging upside down. So I actually did shoot that upside down. So I wouldn't have expected that to be rotated automatically. I should also mention that the rotation option is reached by right-clicking the thumbnail in the film strip. But in there, I also see stacking and create virtual copy, some of the things that we're getting used to more with Lightroom. And there are some ranking and flagging options. So, you know, because I do pretty much everything myself in Lightroom, I probably wouldn't use these myself, but, you know, looking at the options that are available, you know, they look very useful. And you could do, if you was the sort of person that didn't have Lightroom or maybe Aperture or, you know, one of the other better known pieces of software, then you will definitely find these useful. So it's you know, it's good to see them in there. And the other thing to note really is that obviously DxO fully supports directly viewing and manipulating your images in RAW, you know, the RAW images. So you know, it's as long as your camera's supported, which I would imagine pretty much most of them are or would be a few months after they're released, then, you know, you could pretty much use this as your main software to sort of manage your images. Here, I guess, you know, at this point in time, if you knew what the preset did or had created your own, you could probably just go ahead and hit the Process Now button in the, you know, above the film strip. But I'm going to move to the Prepare tab now and have a look at our options. When I first heard about this software, the first thing that I started to think about was, what lenses have I shot with that I would probably like to correct the results of? The first lens that came to mind, the first problem that I started to think about was the chromatic aberration and the lens distortion of Canon's EF-S 10-22mm lens. I owned this lens for a short while when I had a 20D. And although it's a very sharp and very useful lens, it suffers from pretty bad chromatic aberration and distortion, as you can imagine, especially when you're, you know, when you right out at the wide end at 10 millimeters. So I searched out a shot that I recall having to correct in Adobe Camera Raw a few years ago, and it's not a great photo. The light was bad. And the subject was not all that great either. But after I clicked the Prepared tab, I decided to select this image and see what I could do with it. For the sake of time, I'm not going to look into the more obvious options here. But the first thing that I found interesting in the Prepared tab was the light options. If you take a look at the post again, you'll see screenshot 2. And there I have selected to display the light options palette, and I've turned on the compare view in the, you know, the main window there, so that you can see the original and the preview of the changes. Because this image was shot in pretty bad lighting, I selected stronger under DxO lighting options, and then we can see how it really just sort of brings out the detail and the color from the shadows, improving the image somewhat. not something that you couldn't do in Lightroom or Photoshop, but I still found it nice to just be able to achieve that with just one or two mouse clicks. And I guess if you turned this on and had it on in your preset, you could probably just do this automatically, though you wouldn't really want to do that to a big batch of, batch it with a lot of images. But, you know, I just thought it was a nice touch there. So you can also see the exposure compensation, vignetting, and tone curve options under the light palette there. But I'm not going to play around with them here. So, you know, we'll just leave them as they are. They're default automatic values. And the sky there is a little bit blown out, but I'm not going to worry too much about that either. You know, I'm not trying to save the shot, really just sort of see how much I can improve it with relative ease in DxO Optics Pro. A quick look under the color palette shows us that we can adjust the raw white balance, vibrancy, color rendering, color modes, HSL, and the multi-point color balance. So lots of sort of interesting features there. I feel like messing around with these a little, but I don't want to change the color too much from the original, as I'm going to do some comparisons later and show you how much the chromatic aberration and distortion is improved by the software as well. If I play with these things too much, it's going to nullify that to a degree. I guess you could say with, you know, with the light, doing the lighting, it's going to do that as well, but I don't want to take it too far. So the geometry palette is going to help us with the distortion. So let's get in there and have a play. Having turned on the distortion and volume anamorphosis correction options, the distortion was brought down to much more acceptable levels. In screenshot 3 in the forum post, you can see the difference as seen in the prepare window preview when I've zoomed up to 100%. The top is the original image as shot, and the bottom image is the new one that contained the modifications that we've made so far, and the other automatic changes as well that DxO Pro has been told to do are also, they're being done in there automatically. The crops are slightly misaligned because the aspect of the crop, you know, the aspect ratios and everything changed slightly. So the image is getting cropped a little bit differently. So it's not the exact same two places, and you can't seem to move them around so that I, you know, individually, so that I can show you the exact same place. But I think that, there's enough there for you to get an idea of the difference. You can see how, you know, now that we've got this distortion sort of sorted out a little bit, the leaves and the branches are now much better defined than the original. But we still have quite a lot of chromatic aberration, and the distortion isn't 100% fixed, even as it is in this screenshot. So let's take a look under the detail palette now. And I can see sharpness, grain, DxO noise, dust, and chromatic aberration option. So that's what we've been looking for, really. Before we look at the chromatic aberration, though, I wanted to quickly mention that the grain pull down here seems to contain the films that are available in the film pack that we'll take a look at briefly later. Notice in screenshot 4 that some of the options in the palettes are outlined in blue and some are not. This indicates whether the option is turned on or not. If you hit the little power button next to the arrow, for any of the options, the option is toggled on or off. Leaving these as default seems to be fine, but I've turned on chromatic aberration for this shot, and also turned on purple fringing, which was not on by default, because that seems to help a little more here. You will have a hard time seeing the difference with the chromatic aberration turned on and off. Granted, the final image is not perfect still, but if you grab the images from the post and maybe open them in a viewer that allows you to toggle backwards and forwards between the images, then you'll be able to see that there's quite a lot of improvement made just by having the chromatic aberration option turned on there. So that's really, you know, pretty much all I wanted to do with this photo. It's not perfect, but it's definitely greatly improved over the original. So now let's now take a look at the process tab, which allows you to specify how you'd like to do how you'd like to name the files and where to put them and things like that. You can also select the format from JPEG, DNG or TIFF files. If you're looking at the forum posts, then you will be able to get an idea of what there is there in screenshot 5. Note that I have actually removed all of the images from the project now below, from the thumbnails at the bottom in the film strip, because I only wanted to process one of them, the one that I was looking at, and I couldn't figure out easily how to do that. It just seems it wanted to go away and run the process on all of my images, so I just moved them out of the project for now. We can see on the last tab, the review tab, in screenshot 6, where we'd be able to take a look at all of our images had we processed more than one. Note that there are two icons, one to export to Flickr and one to Lightroom. And I don't have a Flickr account, so I didn't try that. But when you click on the Lightroom icon, you're transported to Lightroom and the image dialog, the image import dialog is displayed. And I thought both of these were a nice touch. I know that many people are going to enjoy the fact that there's a direct Flickr upload from there. So, and you know, going back to Lightroom being a little bit easier is also pretty cool. I figured I'd also try DxO Optics Pro to straighten up an image. I've done a few things here, but it can do a lot more. So I figured I'd try it, see what it could do with straightening up of images that were shot with a wide-angle lens. And if you take a look at screenshot 7, you can see that this is as easy as drawing a few lines on the image. You simply click on the vertical parallel lines in the toolbar above the image, and then you're able to draw lines on the image, selecting some reference points for the software to straighten up the image. And this isn't so much like a single line where you used to rotate the image. You're actually selecting the two lines so that you can really sort of bend it and morph it a little bit, so that it really does clear up the distortion that you get with wide-angle lenses. So I corrected an image where I had a wide-angle lens pointing downwards in a room. Obviously that's one thing to do. You can do this the other way around where you're looking up at a tall building and things where they start to sort of converge at the top. You can also use horizontal correction, and there's also a rectangle tool for doing both at once. And this all is really sort of gives a very powerful tool for straightening out the distortion that you can get with some lenses. What happens when you do select these lines or the tools from the toolbar above the image, it also displays the keystoning and horizon tool under the geometry palette, where you can see as well, you could actually just go straight in there and select the same tools. Once finished, if you go into the crop tool, you can see that below the keystoning tool there, if you're looking at the screenshot, that you can select auto based on keystoning horizon, and then you get an automatic crop where it basically just gets rid of all of the bits where it can't give you a full image, and basically creates the largest crop possible. You can of course select any area that you want as well manually and just crop away. So really just touching the surface here, I guess. I'm not going to go much more into the details. Before I move on, I did want to say that there's another way to work easily with Lightroom, and that is to add DxO Optics Pro as an additional external editor in the Lightroom preferences. Then when you right-click an image, as you might do to jump to Photoshop or your photo editing application, Lightroom then gives you a second option where you can select to edit in DxO Optics Pro right there from the shortcut menu. This opens a kind of cut-down version of Optics Pro where you only have the Prepare and Process tab and you work only on the image that you've chose to edit. And I find that that's pretty useful as well, because you're not always going to want to work in batch mode. You're often going to find that you only have one or two images that you want to do. So I thought that was a nice touch as well. So then, what you do is basically you'd make your changes, select the process tab, and then just simply save. You go back to Lightroom, jump back to the Lightroom library, and because Lightroom created the copy, of course, it knows all about it. So let's move on and take a look at the film pack now, and this is really great fun. There's also, I'll create a second post. So if you're still in the old one, go and find the film pack post. I'll name them like episode 118 and then film pack screenshots, so that you'll be able to find them pretty easily. But again, as I say, I'll link them into the show notes as well. So the film pack can be run standalone or integrated in Lightroom. And also there's a Photoshop CS2, CS3 plugin as well. Having completed the review of Optics Pro, I came back, I was using a different machine that I'd, like I say, a 32-bit machine. But I'd managed to successfully install the film pack on my 64-bit Vista machine. So I came back here to do the review, and it turns out that the film pack didn't work on my as a standalone product on my 64-bit Vista machine. So whether this is, again, just not being supported or whether there's a problem there, I don't know. But I decided that, I was always going to be running over time with this podcast anyway. So what I decided to do was to not really look at it as a standalone product, rather go in and have a play around with the Photoshop plugin, which is probably how I would do this. It would be nice to do this the same thing directly in Lightroom. I didn't see, right now the documentation tells you how to jump to Photoshop to use the plugin. That's the Lightroom integration. So I guess there's nothing at the moment, but it would be nice in the future if there was a Lightroom plugin that allows us to do this right in there. So anyway, though, let's take a look at it. It really is, like I say, a lot of fun. Edit your open the photograph in Photoshop, and then you run the film pack plugin from the filter menu, and then basically you get a dialogue. Again, take a look at that the forum post that I just mentioned, and we'll start to look down. I'll number them like one to whatever again. Let's just wander in there and take a look. The plugin is very, very simple to use. The dialogue appears and you select your choice of film from I'm just going to work down the options, but basically you select the choice of film. You can also then change the type of grain and everything. And I'm just going to really show you a few examples of what you get with the various looks. So in screenshot one, you can see the eye. What I'm going to do is I'm going to use the same 100% view of the eye of the Indian gentleman that I shot in India a few months ago in September 2007. And really just show you a close-up of how it looks. And that way you'll be able to also see the grain. It won't allow us to see the whole photo, but I'll drop a few examples in later. So to give us a reference point, screenshot one is simply, there's, you know, nothing has been selected. I haven't applied any films or grain or anything to this image. This is how it was shot straight out of the 5D. In screenshot 2, I've selected color positive film from the color rendition profiles section. After that, I selected Kodak Kodachrome 25 from the second pull-down, which is where you actually select the color positive film. I left the color modes as shot, and I left the DxO film grain as the same as the current color profile. So what it's actually going to be doing here is it's applying grain as it knows it to be from the Kodachrome 25 sample that it holds. So basically, you know, what I've done next in screenshot 3, I've done a little bit of mix and matching, and I've left the film as it, you know, the film selection as it is, Kodachrome 25. But now I've selected the Ilford HPS 800 film for the grain. There is also a film negative selection under the rendition profiles. But let's skip to the black and white films now. Like I say, we're going to run over a little bit. I don't want to investigate every single possibility. And because I never really liked negative film in my film days, I'm just going to skip over that. My favorite effect in the black and white films, though, was probably the Kodak Tri-X 400 film. Screenshot 4 is that Kodak Tri-X 400 with the default settings. Again, I'm leaving the contrast and saturation as shot. And from the special pull-down under the color modes, I tried all of the options and saved option screenshot 5 and 6, showing the selenium and the sepia options respectively. There's another setting in the grain box that allows you to specify film sizes from 35mm and then medium format and large format and then a custom size. This basically, it's just, it again, play around with it and take a look, but you can see that it just sort of changes. It applies slightly different grain, obviously, because all the different formats had different grain characteristics. So back to the color renditioned profiles, and for the last option, I chose the cross-processed film. And in screenshot 7, we can see cross-processed Kodak Elite 100 with all of the other settings as the default. So that you can really get a better idea of how this affects the image as a whole, I'll also include a full image, basically a screenshot of the, you know, the image at 16.something% in Photoshop. But that's the first one there is it's the crossed Kodak Elite 100 effect. And I really can't resist to sort of include a final screenshot, which is number 9. And that's the image processed one last time with Kodak T-Max 3200 applied. All of the effects here, though, are really great to work with. You can literally spend hours just sort of exploring the variations. And, of course, some of these, you'll find that you'll like, and you'll want to add them as artistic options to your workflow. Note that when using the DxO Optix Pro and the film pack from Lightroom, as long as you don't turn off the checkbox there's a checkbox when you export, you will make sure that your changes are saved as another image in a stack. And what that basically will allow you to do is when you get back into Lightroom, they'll all be next to each other and they'll be marked as like 1 of 2, 2 of 2, or, you know, however many there is in that stack. I find this really useful because it saves you wondering where you've put your copies, and it's just really nice to have them all together. So going back to DxO Optix Pro software, I feel that I have a responsibility as someone that you trust for advice on equipment and software such as this to tell you that this new version is it's good, but it can be a little bit clunky. And it really, you know, it's a great suite from a company the size of DxO. But if you're used to the more robust applications such as Photoshop and Lightroom, then you might find, you know, that you feel the same way. By all means, give these products a try before you part with your cash. But you know, obviously, DxO Labs, a great company, and they're creating great software. But you know, there are times when it feels just a little bit clunky. So I really think you should feel it out for yourself before you buy them. I tried a clean install of the software on 32-bit Vista. Obviously, like I said, wouldn't work on 64. So the install of Vista that I used was a clean install, and I ran into a number of minor issues. And I really just didn't want to hide that to you as my listeners. You know, that you're the people that I trust, and hope that you trust me too. So I just wanted to let you know that there were a few small problems. The day before I prepared for this review, version 5.0.3 was released, and you know, I tried to download that as like the default download. It pops up and says, "Do you want to upgrade?" So I did, and then downloaded like a few hundred megabytes to upgrade, and then there was a Windows error. So you know, obviously there are a few things. It feels a little bit like a very, you know, the first version of a new major upgrade. So definitely, though, as time goes by, I downloaded 5.0.3 again, and then reinstalled it from scratch myself. Everything seemed very smooth after that. So I think they've already started to make a lot of improvements. And you know, as you can see, everything worked well enough for me to take you through this, you know, the basic functionality of both of these packages, and I can definitely recommend DxO Optics Pro if you want something that will help you to overcome some of the issues with equipment or just the laws of physics when it comes to creating images, and hopefully make them better. You know, it really worked worked wonders on the images that I had a play with. And as I say, the film pack is just lots and lots of fun. Opens up a whole new world and a load of new creative avenues, so it's well worth a try.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been so very.
So before we finish, I just wanted to say a huge thanks to DxO Labs for being so kind as to make Optics Pro and the film pack available to me for review, and for the kind donation of the suite for the winner of our assignment grand prize that will be awarded to the entrant with the most votes at the beginning of February 2008. Today it's the 23rd of December 2007. So before I finish, obviously I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas. I've tried to find a little bit of festive music from the PodSafe Music Network. And I want to just mention that we were played in by Charlie Crow with Little Drummer Dude. And also in the background right now is Daniel Link with Baby It's Cold Outside. And there'll be just one more episode of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast for the year, before we jump into 2008. And it seems incredible to me how quickly this year has just flown past, and yet so much has happened. And next week I'm going to sort of reflect a little on 2007, and would like to thank Jonathan from the forum for the suggestion. There's also a great thread in the forum right now started by Evan, which is basically looking back and ahead. I've not jumped into that one myself yet, but that's pretty cool as well, if you want to come along and take a look and maybe get involved yourself. But really, just one last Merry Christmas before we finish, and you have a great week, great Christmas, and you know, hope that everything that you wish for comes true. I'll speak to you again next week. Bye bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.